fighters.
You are listening to the PHTLS podcast. My name is Dr. Jeffrey Guy. I'm an associate professor of surgery and director of the Burn Center at the Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. Also, I serve as the associate editor and medical director of PHTLS.
Welcome back to the podcast. The topic that we're going to discuss today is that of airway management. And this is really looking at the Chapter 7 portion of airway and ventilation from the 7th edition of the PHTLS manual. And so I want to talk initially about what really kind of frightens us all, and that is the potential loss of an airway, particularly in somebody who's critically ill or injured. Now, assuring that a patient's airway is patent is really the first priority of trauma management and resuscitation. And really, there's no action more crucial in airway management than the appropriate assessment of the airway. Now, regardless of how an airway is managed, a cervical spine injury has to be considered. The use of any methods of airway control requires simultaneous manual stabilization of the cervical spine in a neutral position until the patient has been completely immobilized. Now, what's important, and I keep kind of saying this over and over again, is that when we say A is for airway, managing an airway is a verb. It isn't necessarily a noun. And what I mean by that is when we say manage an airway, you don't have to have a piece of plastic and you don't have to insert something into somebody to manage somebody's airway. Sometimes the most effective means of managing an airway is basically just perhaps a manual jaw thrust or the insertion of a nasopharyngeal airway associated with bag mask ventilation. If that, what we are looking for as a goal is patency of the lower airway all the way to the atmosphere so we can adequately oxygenate and ventilate a patient. The successful management of airway does not mean the actual putting of a piece of plastic into somebody. It's being able to oxygenate and ventilate the patient and keep the patient alive. Now, management of the airway in the trauma patient takes precedence over all the other procedures that we do in trauma patients because without an adequate airway, a positive outcome cannot be achieved. Now, management of the airway can be challenging, but in most patients, even basic level providers and procedures may be sufficient initially. Now, don't take that as a derogatory statement because I've got this general statement that, you know, paramedics save lives and we know that basics save paramedics. But the majority of the techniques that you will do in airway management don't require the use of an endotracheal tube. In fact, if there's any criticism that may be perhaps leveled, is that perhaps we try to do too many advanced techniques and often overlook the basic techniques. Now, pre-hospital care providers who have been trained in more advanced airway techniques need to maintain their ability to perform these basic essential techniques because these methods provide an acceptable alternative when more advanced techniques fail, and usually all that's required are the basic techniques. Providers with advanced skills always weigh the risks versus the benefits of performing these highly invasive procedures. Now, furthermore, maintenance of advanced skill proficiency, quality assurance, and close oversight by the medical director are required because even though you may have been trained in the use of oral tracheal intubation, this may be a technique or procedure that you only do, say, once or twice a year. And you may not be as proficient at it as you perhaps think you are because of a process we call skills degradation. Now, manual clearing of the airway, this is really the first step in airway management, is a quick visual inspection of the oropharyngeal cavity. Any kind of foreign material such as pieces of food or broken teeth and blood that can be found in the mouth of the trauma patient need to be evacuated. These are swept out of the mouth using a gloved finger or, in the case of blood or vomit, suctioned out of the airway. Now, additionally, positioning the patient on the side when not contraindicated by possible spinal trauma will allow for gravity assistance clearance of the secretions, blood, or vomit. Now, the manual maneuvers are required in unresponsive patients. Now, the tongue becomes flaccid and it falls back in the mouth, blocking the hypopharynx. The tongue is the most common cause of airway obstruction. The tongue is the most common cause of airway obstruction. I haven't been clear. The tongue is the most common cause of airway obstruction. Now, manual methods to clear this type of obstruction can easily be accomplished because the tongue is obviously attached to the mandible, and that moves. And when you move the mandible forward, the tongue moves with it. Now, any maneuver that moves the mandible forward will pull the tongue out of the hypopharynx. So if you stick your fingers in your mouth, I would suggest that you would clean them, but you can feel that the tongue is attached to the front of the mouth. And so if I grab somebody by the front of the mouth and pull it forward, the tongue is obviously going to move with it. The tongue isn't attached to the back of your mouth like you might think it is. It is clearly attached to the front portion of the back of your mouth. So if you move that jaw forward, the tongue is going to move with it. So this requires a description of what we call the trauma jaw thrust. In patients with suspected head and neck or facial trauma, the cervical spine is maintained in a neutral position. The trauma jaw thrust maneuver allows the provider to open the airway with little or no movement to the head and cervical spine. Now, the mandible is thrust forward by placing the thumbs under each zygoma, which is the cheekbone, placing the index and long fingers of the mandible at the same time of the ankle, pushing the mandible forward. Now, if you have your PHTLS manual, and I would highly suggest that you have one, and if you don't, get one. But if you look at figure 7-7, it's a good illustration of how you do the trauma jaw thrust. Now, the trauma chin lift is a maneuver used to relieve a variety of anatomical airway obstructions in a patient who are breathing spontaneously. You can see this in figure 7-8. The chin and lower incisors are grasped and then lifted to pull the mandible forward. Because we know where we pull the mandible, the tongue is going to follow. The pre-hospital care provider wears gloves, obviously, to avoid contamination of body fluids. So basically, you're grabbing them by that lower jaw and pulling it forward. Now, both of these techniques result in movement of the lower mandible anteriorly and slightly caudal, which is towards the feet, pulling the tongue forward and away from the posterior part of the airway and opening the mouth. Trauma jaw thrust pushes the mandible forward, whereas the trauma chin lift pulls the mandible forward. The trauma jaw thrust and trauma chin lift are modifications of conventional jaw thrust and chin lift. Modifications provide protection of the patient's cervical spine while opening the airway by displacing the tongue in the posterior pharynx. Now, when it comes to suctioning the patient may not be capable of effectively clearing built-up secretions, vomitous blood, or foreign objects of the trachea. Now, providing suction is an important part of maintaining that airway. The most significant complication of suctioning is that the suction for prolonged periods of time will actually produce hypoxia. So when you're putting that suction catheter down on somebody, you got to realize you're suctioning not just the grunge and food and vomit and beer and all this other stuff. You're also suctioning oxygen and air. So, and this can may manifest some cardiac arrhythmias, tachycardia, for instance. Pre-oxygenation of the trauma patient providing supplemental oxygen will help prevent hypoxemia. In addition, during an extended period of suctioning, cardiac dysrhythmias may occur from arterial hypoxemia, and it can lead to myocardial hypoxemia or vagal stimulation secondary to tracheal irritation. True vagal stimulation may lead to profound bradycardia and hypotension. Now, the trauma patient, not yet intubated, may require aggressive suctioning of the upper airway. Much larger amounts of blood and vomit may be in the airway on the arrival of the EMS provider than the suction unit can perhaps clear quickly. If so, the patient may be ruled onto his or her side while maintaining cervical spine stabilization. Gravity will then assist in clearing the airway. A rigid suction device is preferred to clear the hypopharynx. Although hypoxemia can result from prolonged suctioning, a totally obstructed airway will provide no airway exchange. Now, aggressive suctioning and patient positioning are done until the airway is at least partially clear. Now, at that point, hyperoxygenation followed by repeated suctioning can be performed. Now, hyperoxygenation, like pre-oxygenation, can be accomplished with either a non-rebreather mask on high-flow oxygen or the bag mask running at 15 liters per minute. The goal of hyperoxygenation is to maintain an oxygen saturation of above 95% at sea level. Those of you who work in the mountains or in Denver, it's obviously not going to be 95%. Now, when suctioning intubated patients through an endotracheal tube, the suction catheter should be made of soft material to limit trauma to the tracheal mucosa and to minimize friction resistance. it needs to be long enough to pass through the tip of the artificial airway. So typically, we're looking at something between 20 and 22 inches or 50 to 55 centimeters and should have smooth ends to prevent mucosal trauma. The soft catheter will probably not be effective in suctioning copious amounts of foreign material or fluid from the hypopharynx of a trauma patient, in which case the device of choice will be one of the tonsil tip or a Yankar type design. Under no circumstances should a tonsil tip or Yankar rigid suction be placed in the end of an endotracheal tube. Say that again. Under no circumstances should a tonsil tip or Yankar rigid suction device be placed in the end of an endotracheal tube. When suctioning an intubated patient, aseptic procedures are vital. The technique really involves the following steps. You want to pre-oxygenate the patient with 100% oxygen, prepare equipment while maintaining sterility, insert the catheter without suction. Suctioning is then initiated, continued for about 15 to 30 seconds while withdrawing the catheter. Re-oxygenate the patient and ventilate for at least 5 assisted ventilations. Repeat as necessary, allowing time for re-oxygenation to take place between procedures. So you've been listening to the PHTLS podcast. On this podcast, we've been talking about some essential and basic airway skills. On the next podcast, we'll get into a little bit more about the use of the various airway adjuncts, including things like nasopharyngeal airways, oropharyngeal airways, and some of the supraglottic airways, and then eventually the endotracheal tube. Thanks for listening to the PHTLS podcast. My name is Jeff Guy. Have a great day.